homage to Venerable Ajahn Anand, Venerable Ajahn Somchai, the Mahateras, the Teras, friends in the Dhamma. I want to give my blessings to all the laity gathered here in Thailand and in other countries as well. So at this time, we're giving our time to the practice of the Dhamma. And this is something that's difficult to find in the world because you've gathered from many countries, many different time zones, many places. And each individual who's gathered here now needs to have the wisdom to manage their time to line up with the online course. So all of you gathered, you have wisdom that you're using this development of the world, this worldly development, in order to support your Dhamma practice, using this online technology of the present. Because we look in the past of people who are interested in Dhamma practice, or the faithful Buddhists, if they wanted to go on a retreat like this, they'd have to travel to a center, to a location that would require spending their funds and using time. One has to look after their health and many various things when one travels like that. But now we have this worldly development, and we can use that to support our practice, to make it easier for those of you gathered here who are interested in Dhamma, so that you can come practice. And another aspect, another thing that's difficult to find, is this Dhamma practice that you do with the mother, father, great teacher. And the great teacher is one who teaches directly, teaches straight to all of you. And this is something that you listen to and you appreciate from wherever you are, from many different countries. Because we see that the mother, father, great teachers, they're becoming fewer and fewer as time goes on. So at this time, we have a very good opportunity, very good chance to listen to the Dhamma from the great master, from the great teacher. So we listen, we're able to feel a connection, we appreciate their teachings. There's question and answers, so that if you have any question, you can ask directly of them. And this is something that's difficult to find. So for all of you, you are ones that are heedful, not heedless in your life. Looking at all of you on the screen there, I see many different ages. There's young, middle-aged, older. And this is something good and admirable, that all of you from different walks of life or ages, you're seeking out merit and goodness in your life. And speaking of this merit and goodness in life, one aspect of that is the training of the mind, to bring the mind to samadhi and peacefulness. And this is something that we can use throughout our lives. And that's a cause, or a wholesome cause that we're cultivating. And we call that the cultivation of parami, or spiritual virtue. And so even if in this life we're not able to attain to the Dhamma, we build our parami on each occasion, every time we keep storing up our parami, so that this becomes a cause, or in the future, and in future life, can be reborn as humans, meet the Buddha Sasana again, to practice generosity, virtue, and meditation, to bring the mind to peace, to give rise to wisdom, so that true liberation can arise. So I see all of you gathered here on this Dhamma retreat. And we can reflect that this creates an environment of Dhamma practice, practicing together as a group. In this way, we get this energy, this strength of the group. It's an energy of Dhamma practice. So this is practicing as a group, going together as a group. I also see the group of monastics here practicing, and we're able to listen together to the Dhamma talk of Venerable Ajahn Anand. That's a live talk, or a fresh talk, not pre-recorded. And so if possible, we seek out the time to do this. We don't just throw away the opportunity, because it's an opportunity of value. And when I mentioned earlier that about wisdom, why did I say that? That you all have wisdom. Because we see that wisdom has many types. There's the wisdom that arises from study. We've all studied since being children to learn various subjects, to be able to have a livelihood. And so this is wisdom of one type. And there's the wisdom of thinking, investigating, analyzing. And so this is wisdom of another type. And there's wisdom to cure suffering, to alleviate suffering. And this is the wisdom that arises from meditation, from bhavana, that all of you are doing. And this wisdom that arises from meditation, how does it arise? What arises through, firstly, practicing generosity and virtue, and training the mind in peace and collectedness. And we train the mind to have this samadhi, this collectedness, to make it full, to make it right samadhi or correct samadhi. Then this gives the energy to the mind to be able to contemplate, to be able to contemplate and give rise to true wisdom that's able to alleviate all the suffering in the heart. And in the end, able to cut off all ignorance, all greed, aversion, and delusion. So on this occasion, practicing the Dhamma together, we're focusing on the training of the mind to bring the mind to samadhi first. So usually, all of you have trained before. You have this foundation and training in samadhi already. Various meditation objects, various kamatanas that you have cultivated in the past, whichever meditation object you have an affinity for or that you like or you're skilled in, then may you do it a lot, may you train in it a lot. I could think back to the time when I first ordained in my first rains retreat. Venerable Ajahn Anand was teaching the new monks, and we went to study for the what they call the Naktam tree. It's a monastic exam of the first level that tests monks in various aspects of monastic knowledge. And one of the subjects was about the Araka Kamatana, or the protection meditations. In this Araka Kamatana, there's four, according to the scriptures. There's firstly the recollection of the Buddha, the practice of loving kindness, the recollection of asubha, or the not beautiful, the recollection of death. So these four meditation objects. So I studied this. I was able to remember it, but I wasn't interested in it. But then when I came to practice and train the mind, we'd have the morning meditation period and chanting, the evening chanting and meditation. And Venerable Ajahn Anand would teach, not according to the texts, but he would teach the qualities of the fully self-awakened Buddha. And the Buddha was able to realize full self-awakening because he had cultivated his spiritual virtues to a great degree to realize that awakening. It had this quality of great wisdom, great purity, great compassion to teach beings, to teach humans and all different kinds of beings to reach the end of suffering. And then after that, we have the cultivation of loving kindness, the divine abiding of loving kindness, cultivating loving kindness for oneself and others. And I listened to this teaching from Venerable Ajahnanan. And having listened, I understood, oh, this is an appropriate meditation object for those of an aversive character type, or a character type that gives rise to aversion or anger easily, to have loving kindness, watch over, care for the mind, to make the mind softer or gentler. And there's the asubha kamatana, recollecting the not beautiful aspects of the body. And this helps to reduce the liking and attraction towards one's own body and others' bodies. So this is another way of Dhamma practice. And then one sees in truth that no matter whose body it is, it's not beautiful. And in the end, the body decomposes and rots and disintegrates. And then it's gone. There's nothing left. And lastly, we have the recollection of death, what we call Marana Nusati. So realizing or recollecting that all life ends in death, that no one escapes death. And this helps us to be heedful in our lives. So during my first range retreat, all the monks were trained like this by Venerable Ajahnanan. So we listened to the Dhamma and maybe didn't feel it that deeply, just kind of listened in a casual way, like in one ear, out the other, and listened about these four meditation objects. Then we see that, well, why do we learn about these? Well, we see that when we practice, when we train the mind, and we keep practicing, we keep going onwards and onwards, we keep practicing on and on, eventually we meet with obstacles. And the meditation object that is our primary meditation object, sometimes it's just not working, the mind just is not sticking with it. So one's mind might be very busy, agitated, chaotic, sometimes feeling sad or depressed, sometimes weary, tired, other times feeling annoyed, sometimes feeling lazy, sometimes just not wanting to meditate. So then we train the mind, we practice right there, or we see that the mind isn't strong yet. It's like a small child. When the child is learning to walk, they walk for a little bit and then they fall over. Then they have to get up and keep trying to walk again, then they fall over, and so on. So it's like that. So these four meditation objects, these four kamatana, they're something that helps us to care for the mind, to care for our meditation practice, so that our meditation practice goes well. Because we keep meditating and meditating, many years go by, then we come to know the value of these four meditation objects. And then I realized, oh, Venerable Ajahnanan taught these meditation practices like this. And sometimes he would show us asubha videos or images of corpses. And I didn't like that. I didn't want to look at it. But then later I saw the value of it. I saw that it did have value, to see that in truth the body is not beautiful, that all lives end in death. And sometimes we meditate and the mind's just busy and distracted, and whatever we do, the mind's just not peaceful. And so Venerable Ajahnanan would teach to recollect death, recollect that all life ends in death, and what can we take with us when we die? We have to leave everything behind. So therefore we should seek out that which is best, that which is supreme in life, which is this practice of training the mind, meditation. So we train the mind like this, and the mind keeps improving and improving. And we recollect that, are we going to still be here tomorrow? Well, it's not sure. So we keep training in these meditation objects. We see that they have more and more value, and their value keeps increasing for us. So this explanation that I've given you now, so we have our main meditation object that we train in, and that's good that you have your main meditation object, and yes, you should keep doing that, keep training with it. But we have these other meditation objects as well that can help to control certain defilements and to support our practice so that our meditation practice gets or becomes even better or becomes more or more developed as well. So in our daily lives that have passed already, we use our mind for all kinds of work all the time. So whether at our workplace or caring for our family, our mind doesn't stop to rest. So in our Dhamma practice, it's a good opportunity to rest the mind. And when we rest the mind, we give the mind strength and energy. So how do we rest the mind to give the mind strength and energy? Well, it's with this very meditation practice, with bhavana. So we practice meditation to train the mind to become peaceful. And each individual on this retreat has their own experience of this. So today's the fifth day, and 5 days have passed already. You have probably been able to experience some samadhi, some peace and collectedness some of the time. So if today we're sitting, we feel peaceful, it's not that tomorrow will be good like today, so don't think like that or don't hope like that. Because it's this samadhi, this quality of peace and collectedness, some days it's there, some days it's not there. But whatever the case is, we have to train in it every day. Because in our life, we've been born already, we have this chance to train in the meditation object, to bring the mind to peace, collectedness, to stillness, for the mind to be with a single object. And this is something that's hard to do. We've just started training. We think from the time with the Buddha Sasana, since the time we've been born till the present, how much time have we just let our mind go, just chasing after whatever object, not training the mind at all. That would be more time than the amount of time we spent training the mind. So don't think that if today is good, then tomorrow must be good. And don't think that it's definitely going to be not good. But the great masters have taught that when it's good, then do it. When it's not good, then do it. This is the right way to practice. And then when we keep practicing like this, then the fruits of practice arise on their own. So in my first range retreat, myself and my friends, we were practicing quite strictly, practicing firmly with determination. Venerable Ajahn Anand was leading us in that. And it's just like all of you here online, it's not any different. Venerable Ajahn Anand gives the talk in the morning, gives the question and answer period in the evening, leads the meditation. It's like for myself, when I first ordained, it was just like that. We'd do the evening chanting, and there'd be about an hour-long meditation period together. And some days the mind would be quite peaceful, the samadhi would be good. And afterward, one would talk with one's friends and say, oh, the meditation was quite good today, the samadhi was good, the mind felt cool and peaceful. But then on another day, the mind was distracted and agitated. There was no peacefulness. So on the day when there was samadhi, then one would feel proud and happy, like, oh, I'm quite good at this. I'm able to sit meditation for 1 hour, 2 hours, able to sit like that and feel peaceful. But then on another day, sitting meditation, the samadhi's no good, the mind's not peaceful at all, the body's pain and painful and sore, the body's moving around, restless, then one feels sad, like, oh, I'm not able to do it. I didn't get anything out of it today. So there's one day, Venerable Ajahn Anand was teaching the disciples, teaching about doubt, and none of the disciples there had any questions. And usually Venerable Ajahn Anand would teach on the Padimokkha days, on the full moon and new moon days. And he was teaching about when it's good, then do it. When it's not good, then do it. So we need to train the mind a lot to this training, this practice. It's not still, it's not well trained yet. It's like training a horse, like there's a wild horse. That horse is not tame, it's not trained. So it needs to be reined in, needs to be spurred, or needs to be trained in various ways to the point where it's trained well. And then in that way, that horse can be used for various tasks. So there's one story I'd like to share with you about my meditation practice for myself and my friends in my first range retreat. Sometimes we would sit meditation after the evening chanting, sometimes 1 hour, sometimes an hour and a half, sometimes 2 hours. And then we would hear the bell. And sometimes right before the bell rang, maybe just 5 minutes before the bell rang, the mind would just be starting to get peaceful. And one would think, oh, it's too bad. Why did the bell ring so quickly? Because one wants the peace and happiness from the meditation practice. And you think, oh, meditating for 2 hours and just getting peace for just 5 minutes, why does it have to be that way? And so this kept happening. It was happening often. And so Venerable Ajahn Anand gave a teaching that, oh, that's good. Just keep doing it and do that often. And later on, the samadhi, the peace, will last longer. That the nature of the mind is just like this. The important point is not to control it, not to control the mind, that, oh, this, the mind has to be peaceful like this, it has to be this way, it has to be still in this way. But we let the mind go according to nature. If the mind's busy and agitated, then we have mindfulness to know that. The important point is to have mindfulness to know that. Just like Venerable Ajahn Anand teaches that when one wakes up in the morning, one bows to the shrine, bows to the Buddha, Dhamma Sangha, one has mindfulness from the very beginning of the day. Then one is with the meditation word, like Bhutto, or with the in and out breathing, ever since one first wakes up in the morning. Then one goes about one's daily life, and then before sleep, one bows to the shrine again, bows to the Buddha again, and one establishes mindfulness well when one is entering into the time for sleep. And so in this way, the mind gets used to it. The mind gets familiar with or close to the meditation word, close to the contemplation, and familiar with goodness and merit from the time of waking to the time of sleep. So we keep doing this in an ongoing way. We do it all the time. We develop our mindfulness like this, and this leads to samadhi, to peace. Then it becomes easier to enter samadhi, and the busyness and agitation of the mind reduces. So this is a fruit and benefit of cultivating mindfulness. So for one who is intent on reaching samadhi, this peace and collectedness, then one needs to cultivate a lot of mindfulness and develop a lot of mindfulness. So I offer, may the parami of all the self-awakened Buddhas, all the teachings of the Buddhas, all the noble Sangha of the Buddhas, all the Bodhisattvas, may all their blessings and parami give you the fruit and results of this Dhamma practice. To all of you who have gathered here on this retreat, may you all grow in samadhi, grow in your meditation practice. May you progress to reach the point of attaining to the Dhamma, to reaching the shore of Nibbana. So may that be so for all of you.